If you've been told to pull up your socks recently, then make sure it's a pair of RCR socks. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.
Welcome back, everybody. You are here on the Up Your Brave show with Natalie Cutler-Welsh on Reality Check Radio. Today, I'm talking to the amazing Kate Billing. We're going to be diving into the topic of menopause, specifically menopause as a gateway to midlife awakening. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thanks very much for having me, Natalie. Looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. And just seeing where it flows and where it goes. And if you're a man and you're thinking, oh, menopause, or if you're a young woman and you're thinking, oh, do I need to know this? Trust me, there will be some amazing gold in this interview for you. If you don't know Kate, Kate Billing is a human-obsessed leadership pragmatist with 25 plus years in the people, culture, and leadership space. She is New Zealand's leading voice on human-centered leadership and the intersection of gender, age, equity in our workplaces, working with CEOs, executive teams, and senior women leaders. Always connected to her diverse global community, Kate brings the cool stuff that's happening out there in New Zealand and takes the best of her homegrown wisdom to the world. Along with her work in the leadership space, she's also an advocate for elevating, enriching, and amplifying the conversation about menopause in workplaces across Aotearoa, New Zealand, through her 2,500 strong Menopause at Work LinkedIn group, feel free to join, and Pause Thought web series. Kate's work combines leadership development, personal development, and leadership well-being, drawing on both timeless and leading edge thinking from the fields of psychology, social neuroscience, oh goodness, chronobiology, anthropology, and philosophy. Combined with a healthy dose of lived experience, this powerful mix delivers the whole person and whole life human-centered leadership development experience she calls fully human. Ooh, well, I'm excited to welcome you, a very experienced and fully human woman, to this amazing show today. So good.
I can't wait to get stuck in.
I know. So good. I know there's so much to talk about. I always like to start my shows by giving a little bit of a picture, a little bit of insight into the person I've got in front of me today. Could you share with our listeners a little bit of your backstory, the journey that brought you here to be doing the work you do today?
Sure thing. Four of the words that I would use, I try and, like, when you get to my age and you look back, the longer the story gets. So you've got to kind of work out some hacks and shortcuts. So the way I would sum up the backstory is kind of in three stages. There's the human-obsessed leadership pragmatist you mentioned before, and most recently adding to that, midlife advocate. And so the human-obsessed piece, that starts when I'm 7 years old, and I say, in response to the question from a well-meaning and curious adult, what do you want to be when you grow up? Like anyone has the idea at seven. But I was very clear that I wanted to be a doctor, and in particular to understand why people got sick. So to really get into this study of disease, which apparently is a very weird thing for a seven-year-old to say. But that, I mean, that's based on the limited experience of the world you have at that stage, right? It's like, what are the things that you can do? But that has continued through my life to this day, really. It took me into what I studied at school, at university, and has shapes everything I do about how I spend my time and money in my spare time. My husband calls me a complete science nerd. I'm into biohacking. I'm totally obsessed with the human experience and what it is in us and between us that makes us human. And that I have the chance now to put that into my work. But that is also tempered by this pragmatism about, you know, you've got to be able to get your head and hands and heart around the work and apply it in real practical terms to life and to leadership challenges that you have. And that's something that I've learned to do over the last 25 years. I mean, I think when I was in my early 30s, I was pretty idealistic. I remember some of the initial conversations I had with executives and partners in the law firms that I worked in about how the work environment was fundamentally unfit for human habitation. And I was very soapboxy in my early days. And I've tempered that a bit by recognizing actually the more we can make it resonate with people's experience and be practical for immediate and daily application, the more meaningful and more impactful it's going to be. And so, and that's my approach to everything in life is like, so what does it mean for me or you or how, and how, what do we do with it? And then the third piece of the backstory is this, and you mentioned it in the title of the show, this midlife awakening and the place of advocacy I find myself in, which happened with my own, how to describe it without using expletives on the radio show, protect our dear listeners' ears, but just horrendous time of arriving into perimenopause and also being confronted by my own internalized ageism. Mm. Listeners can't see my hair, but I have silver hair, which at 49 I had to let grow out because the cost of colouring it and chopping it out every 5 weeks was getting prohibitive. But it was quite...
It looks glamorous, I have to say. It looks gorgeous and glamorous.
Yeah, quite a confronting... I would say the awakening, my personal midlife awakening was quite a confronting one. And I'm very grateful for it. And it's taken a little while to get through it. But what it has done is made me deeply committed to supporting other human beings, but at the moment, particularly women through it, so that it doesn't have to be so lonely and chaotic. Yeah. So that's a little bit of backstory.
Well, you know, it's so fascinating that we're connecting at this time. I mean, like you, I've always been so, I guess, obsessed is a very similar word with humans, with people, how they interact, how they show up, what drives them. I'm just fascinated by that consistently, particularly the last 4 years, I've been even more fascinated by humanity, but same as you, even when, since I was a teenager, maybe not the age of seven, but it's so magical to see. Let's talk about what you mean by the word awakening, because to some of my listeners, it can be spiritual awakening or truth, reality awakening. Are you talking about the awakening, you know, during a midlife phase of who am I? Who am I now? Talk me through what you mean by that.
Yes, in a short answer, all of the things. My experience of this is I've woken up to myself in different ways at different times through my life, and some of it I have resisted strenuously, particularly in my 20s, which meant that I didn't really wake up. I just caused myself a whole lot of pain and suffering. The existential crisis that I found myself in a number of ways in my 20s. More than anything, I was trying to keep myself asleep, I think. And this is part of what I've realized as I've gotten older. The benefit of getting older and aging is this wisdom of perspective and experience. For me, the midlife awakening piece has been, it's partly been driven, and this is something that women have, that men don't have in quite the same way, is about your changing body and brain. We know neurobiologically, you know, our hormones drive everything, right? And estrogen is responsible for over 300 different things in the body. And when it starts to leave the building and then come back into the building and then leave the building again, like on a revolving door, I certainly was brought up close and personal with the experience of my body, being more in my body and appreciating that I am a body, I don't have a body. Whereas I think a lot of women observe themselves in the mirror, you know, often, and we are critical and we are working with our bodies to have them look a particular way that's associated with youth and beauty and that kind of thing. And when it starts aging and changing and you can't do anything about it anymore, that can be quite confronting. We all have a bit of, you know, body dysmorphia, even if it's only in a small way. And I have in my 20s, part of my experience was having body dysmorphia and disordered eating for years, a number of years. And I got it handled and then it came back in my late 40s. And this recognition that, oh, crikey, okay, there's a bunch of stuff about myself that I need to take a good look at because these things are back. And they're not going to change because my body is changing. So I think there's this waking up to the reality of your body and having to confront some pretty uncomfortable ideas that you might have about yourself and some of the ideas that you've taken on from society about how you should look and where you should be in life and what good looks like and all of these different roles as well that women in particular find ourselves living into, with stereotypes associated to them, mental models that we're not even aware of, that we can start to bump up against the edges of. One of mine, which came up in my journaling, I'm a mad fan of journaling. So pro tip number one for listeners is, if you don't have a practice of deliberate and conscious reflection, meeting yourself on paper on a regular basis, I don't care how regular, but meeting yourself on paper to understand what's going on in your own mind, it's super important, because you do see patterns. It gets a bit bloody boring, to be frank. Sometimes you're like, here I am saying the same things again. But part of that awakening was that I was unconsciously living into the stereotype of the middle-aged woman, and that in my mind, that stereotype was very negative. And so I was in a massive intrapersonal struggle with who I thought I was and then the stereotype that didn't fit. And so combined with the whole what's changing in your body and your brain, I'm someone who depends on my mind for a living. And suddenly I couldn't knit things together as quickly as I had been able to, and couldn't instantly retrieve ideas. And there were a whole lot of things that were changing that just make you go, hang on a second.
Yes. And as part of that midlife, self-questioning, I suppose, did you fall into this? And I know this is really common for people to go, oh my goodness, you know, I'm 48. I thought I would be making this much by now, or I thought I would have achieved that by now. Like that whole goalpost thing and age when they come together and they're not exactly what you thought they'd be. Did you have that?
Yes. I think everybody, the way I think about, because I've been doing a lot of thinking about this over the last 6 years, that there is almost like the first half of life, you're kind of on autopilot, right? There's a model of, it's called the three-stage life: learn, earn, retire. And that's great when nobody kind of lives past the age of 65 or younger. I mean, retirement as a thing, it was created, I mean, pensions have been around for a long time, but retirement as a concept was created in Germany in the late 1800s by the Kaiser, you know, and the retirement age was 70, knowing that most people were dead by then. So I think we're that first half of life, there's a very clear map with directions, options, you know, there are junctions where you get to choose. Women have non-linear careers, whether they have children or not. We tend to be something about us that we like to, like, change and evolve and reinvent a bit, whereas men are much more linear career, achieve, you know, status stuff, be the one who holds steady through all of the changes that life as a family or relational unit might have, you know, so there's different pressures on them.
Yeah.
But regardless, there are expectations that we take on about social norms that are about moving forward in your career, getting a better house, a better car, you know, wearing certain sorts of clothes, looking a certain way, that are all part of the map. Like, do these things and you'll be happy. And there is a whole lot of research, now most of it done by economists, actually, which I really like, which talks about how life gets harder and unhappier in the middle. And research suggests that it's 47 and a half. We are 47 and a half years old on average, regardless of gender, when we are at our unhappiest.
Wow.
The good news is it gets better. And that runs contrary to the story that we have. Like, you reach a peak in the middle, you're meant to have achieved all the things, further to your point, because it's all downhill from here. And the research is quite the opposite, but we don't know that going in. So we're getting to this place, particularly for women, where gendered ageism, including the internalized kind of once I'm 50, I'm past it kind of thing. That's part of that's what we say quietly to ourselves in the dead of night, and what society says to us not so quietly in the form of media and advertising and recruitment and all the rest of it. So, yeah, I think a lot of people arrive into that going, I had these expectations of where I would be and who I would be, and my life is not like that. I mean, I kind of had a slightly different version of it, which was, I am who I wanted to be. My life is what I wanted it to be. I've got everything. Now what?
And like, so, what's next?
Yeah,
like
now in a positive what's way? Next? Yeah. And I think that was part of the not knowing, like the map ran out. I was at the edge of the map. I love on, you know, old school maps from back in the days of the genuine explorers when we didn't know what there was in the world. You know, you sail off the edge. That out in parts that were not yet explored on the map would be written, sometimes written, go where there be dragons. It's this idea of going into the unknown, because the unknown has fear and unknown, you know, it has unknown rewards, but because of the way our brain is wired, it's got lots of unknown threats. And that's, I think, whether you've got what you expected or not in life, midlife brings you toe to toe with, so what now, particularly when there's more than half the sand in the bottom of the hourglass.
I love how you use the phrase, instead of midlife crisis, you're talking about midlife awakening. Mm. And it is, I think it is an opportunity. Once people kind of like, you know, they go through like, what is my body doing? And I thought I would be making this much money or have this car. Once they kind of let that go and they dust themselves off, it's kind of a, I think, a fascinating time or of opportunity to kind of, right, reinvent yourself. That's the classic one. But people can reinvent themselves and think about, yeah, where, I don't care as much what people think of me. I think that's one of the biggest thing that comes in, hopefully for most people, definitely for a lot of women, I think it is. What kind of insights do you have or practical tips for our listeners around if they are at that point, maybe 47 and a half? I passed that a while back, so I've moved on. But, you know, if they're kind of at that point or nearing that point, what are some ways that we can help ourselves to see the opportunities instead of, you know, look back and think of what we haven't done? How can we dust ourselves off and maybe reinvent?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I wasn't 47.5 when mine hit. I think the bottom of the bottom for me was 53. I reckon it was 2 and a bit years ago. And I remember the week it happened going, it was about a 2 week period. Because I know about all of this stuff, doesn't mean it doesn't happen to you. It just means you're more aware when it is happening. I was like, man, this better be the bottom. This better be the bottom of the turning point, because I don't think I can deal with this getting any worse. So I think the first thing that helps is educate yourself, is understand more about what's happening to you at a physiological and neurological level, particularly for women, and then at an existential and experiential level. So you and I share an obsession, and I don't think it's too strong a word, for this whole, what is this human business, man? What is it to be me and to bang around the world as a with this beautiful body and mind and other human beings, and we're all the same and we're all different? You know, it's just, it's weird and wonderful. But most of us don't understand enough about that, about ourselves and our own experience, hence journaling. And then also just about general context of what it is to be human. And so I recommend, particularly for women, that they do things like, I would suggest read Nikki Bazant's new book, The Everything Guide, which is about how to be happy and healthy in midlife and beyond. Great general kind of book about what's going on and some tips you can take, because it is different. Life is different now. There are brilliant resources around, fabulous podcasts, et cetera, around that you can listen to that help you understand the menopausal body and brain, perimenopause, who knew that was a thing, and can last 10 years. So get to know your body, pay more attention to your body and what it's telling you, because it's telling you a lot. So is your mind. Talk with your friends. We're not women.
I thought you were going to say talk to your body, which I agree with.
Well, no, I totally agree. Talk to your body. I'm a big one for actually, this is a practice called caring for the animal, which sounds weird and is a little bit weird, but it's actually rather delicious once you get into it. And it's like when you're having a bath or a shower, is really deliberately putting your attention on different parts of your body, and like particularly your feet, poor old feet. I mean, we would be absolutely screwed without them. But it's just really placing generous, compassionate awareness on a particular part of your body and really noticing it, touching it the way you would your cat, yeah, your dog, or your child, and giving it love and like this is proper self-care stuff, right, is being in that moment with that part of your body, touching it, appreciating it, noticing it, and just all over, knees, poor old knees, knees, calves, they're all doing, knees and ankles and hands by this age start to like seize up a little bit. So it's really, instead of being angry and frustrated and impatient with our bodies, is being more present occupants and partners in terms of mind and body together with them, right? Recognizing, like I said before, we don't have a body, we are a body. So, but I think also further to this talking with your friends thing, you know, women are pretty, we're much better at this than men generally, and research would bear this out, at both nurturing those, that what I call the type five, those Robert Dunbar, who is a famous social anthropologist, that's one of the Dunbar numbers that he talks about, is that we basically can have these loving, close relationships with like five people. And when you think about that in your world, the people who are your ride or die, you know, who would help you bury the body, or are the ones that you call, that you could tell anything, great or bad. Nurturing those relationships, but really paying attention to the conversations that we have together. Like, are we still talking about the same old stuff? Or are we being really curious and open and not talking about ourselves, but actually asking our friends and our family members and our partners questions that are nice and simple and open and curious, and give them a chance to share with us, and us to share with them some of the things that are changing for us and that we're wondering about and that we're struggling with, rather than just stitch and bitch or bottomless rosé lunches. And, you know, good times, great, but that by sharing our experiences and getting into things a little deeper, you know, we can learn more and realize we're not alone.
Yeah, because everyone's experience is different, I think, with the menopause and perimenopause. But I imagine there's a lot of similarities. One thing I wanted to mention when you were talking about the body, and I love the words you used, generous, compassionate, you know, to different parts of your body. It reminds me of a book I used to read to my kids, and it was something like, thank you, feet, for running me around today. Thank you, knees, for holding me up, you know, when I'm feeling low or whatever. And it was like thanking. And I love that. And we'd read it to the kids. And I think it's such an important thing, especially as they grow and also as we grow, rather than being like, oh, like me, right? Oh, I'm so short. My boobs are so small. Like, I could easily do that. My skin's really spotty. Like, I can do that. Or I can be like, thank you so much, because I have had back injuries in the past. And like, thank you so much to my back for, you know, being strong. I started doing hot yoga. But I used to do adventure racing. And so I know, I'm just, again, fascinated by what the human body can do. But because I've had such hard times physically with my body, not so much emotionally, but I know they're interrelated, is that I love the fact that I can, I just really appreciate my mobility, rather than focusing on like, oh, now I have a little bit of a tummy roll because I'm 51. So I feel like it's this balance of noticing changes and still loving on your body. And I love that practice you mentioned of physically, like, I think it was patting the animal or something that you said?
Caring for the animal.
Yeah.
Like,
What are your comments on that? On like, you know, you mentioned noticing and sharing, which is so important. You're not alone, but also like continuously, you know, loving on what you do have instead of laser focusing on the things you don't have or that have changed.
What we have the opportunity to do, I firmly believe, particularly in midlife, with some of these changes that are just wrought, they are being wrought upon us. We can be doing all of, as women, we can be doing all of the things, all of the right and inverted commas things, and the things we've done that have kept us skinny, because that's mainly what our focus is when we're younger. And they don't work anymore because the body and brain are changing and we have to adapt. I think this is a time of, the world is full of adaptive challenges, right? Challenges that ask us not just to apply skill and energy and effort to things, but actually to question our identity and our beliefs about things and our habits and our ways of living and working and leading. And this time is a time to really hone consciously and deliberately that capability, the capability and the capacity to grow through adaptive challenges, One of our big ones is adapting to our changing body and brain, and to learn how to navigate life and leadership transitions in a really conscious and deliberate way, because they are coming for us aplenty from here on out, you know, and like in serious ways. This is like the most brilliant, when you look at it, once you get over the grief, I think there's genuine grief. I certainly felt it for the loss of sometimes opportunities, certainly aspects of identity, certainly, you know, the body. It's like, you know, the things that I thought when I look back at my 20s and I had this terrible body dysmorphia and eating disorder, and it was just hideous for so long. And I look back at myself and I'm just like, Christ, the amount of suffering I created for myself. But now I can kind of learn to grow through that. I think these seeing all of this as an opportunity to learn how to be more adaptive and better at transitions is the critical opportunity, recognizing, because otherwise if we don't, we're lining ourselves up for a whole lot of suffering and more suffering in the second half. You know, even one of the big things I would say to people, particularly through this, you know, journaling and reflection and the conversations we have with ourselves to unearth some of these narratives that we have about aging, which start with our aging body and face for women, because gendered ageism is totally a thing. And you start getting ageism, you know, about being older in your 40s as a woman, definitely in your 50s. And it's not just in our minds, it's an actual thing in society and organisations. But we have to handle these things, use these internal conversations as a signpost of work to be done. Because what we know, a woman called Becca Levy in the States, she is a professor at Yale University in both epidemiology and psychology. And she and her team have been researching for 30 years the impact of our internal narratives, limiting stories and stereotypes and attitudes about aging on our health and lifespan. Not handling your negative aging stories, your beliefs about the diminishment and decrepitude of age, and that your things are getting worse and harder, and that costs you 7.5 years of life. I don't know about you, but no one, not even me, is going to steal 7.5 years of lifespan from me. We've only got one, as far as I'm aware, at least consciously, that I'm going to be me. I don't know who I'll be next time, but it's like,
well, it shows you the power of the mind. That's fascinating. I mean, I knew that like intellectually, but I didn't have a numeric to go with it. So 7 years,
7.5 years on average of life. And that's those negative attitudes, mindsets and stories about aging that we have ourselves are then reinforced by the people we hang out with. If our friends have these and we start talking about, like, when, Natalie, seriously, at what point does somebody go from falling over to having a fall? You know, that language.
Right. Yes.
Oh, I fell over, yes. Versus, oh, I had a fall. She had a fall. That speaks to, you know, there's a subtle difference, but that subtle difference is I'm of an age where now I have falls rather than, oops, fell over. And, you know, the fact that might cost you 7.5 years of life. When women, there's a thing called the marginal decade, which is the fact that the last 10 years of our lives are lived in ill health or declining health. And most, I mean, that you spend most money on your health in the last year of your life, right? Well, not exactly on your health, shall we say. It's nice to call it a marginal decade. For men, it's 9 years on average, and for women, it's 13 years on average. So we live longer, but we spend more of our time in ill health. And a lot of that gets set up through this midlife transition, and in particular, the way we navigate perimenopause and menopause because of the long-term health implications. And part of those long-term health implications are in our minds, not just in our bodies.
I'm going to call that the power of the midlife mantra, meaning what we're saying and repeating, probably on repeat, right, to ourselves. And something that I learned, I can't remember where, maybe it was 5 years ago, is, and I don't do this all the time, but a lot, when I get out of bed, I will go, regardless of the weather, I will go in my mind or out loud, I'll say, hello, beautiful day. Hello, beautiful body. And that's it. Hello, beautiful day. Hello, beautiful body. And I feel like energetically, and you know, I can be looking in the mirror or I can be looking outside or whatever, but, or I can be lying in bed and I just say, it's one of the first things I try to connect with intentionally. And because it elevates my mood and it shifts things instead of going, oh God, I look tired. Look at my hair or whatever most people would do.
Yeah. Yeah. I have put my hand on my heart, feel my heart beating. Just notice that that's there. And I think I love not getting straight up out of bed. I hate snooze buttons, but it's just taking.
I don't even use an alarm unless I have a meeting.
No, neither. I think, you know, work with you as much as possible. And this is part of the chronobiology stuff. As much as possible, you know, don't like using the word need. We have an opportunity to better understand our rhythms. We have lots of clocks that are run by hormones, not just sex hormones, that sort of drive us into, including the circadian or circadian, depending on where you're from, which is the big 24-hour clock, right? And if you understand where your natural rhythms are, you don't have to use an alarm, you know, but there are a whole lot of things. We won't go down that rabbit hole about how to do it, but just spending that first 5 minutes or few minutes in bed, just sort of noticing your body, waking up to your body, not just opening your eyes and just kind of sitting with the day and having gratitude in some small way. I mean, the thing I would say to people is say things that you genuinely believe to yourself. You know, I'm not a big fan of wallpapering over the cracks, but there's always something. There's always something to begin the day from a place of gratitude with.
Yeah, you don't want to be like, I feel amazing if you actually feel not well at all. You want to acknowledge it. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Up Your Brave show. Today, I'm talking to Kate Billing. We're discussing many things, including menopause as a gateway to midlife awakening. We would love to hear your thoughts, your reflections. Have you hit 47 and a half? What do you do on the daily or maybe now and then to connect with your body and also to shift your mindset? You can tell us in a text, 2057 on the text, or email inbox at realitycheck.radio. Kate, we are chasing the clock, actually. So I'm going to ask you my wrap-up questions. If you were to truly up your brave for the remaining months of 2024, what would you do or not do?
Well, what I'm not doing is drinking alcohol. So I'm having an alcohol-free 100 days. I'm a big fan of 100-day practices.
What day are you on?
I haven't got my phone near me. I've kind of lost count. I'm just on it at the moment. I think I'm on day 12. I did it at the beginning of the year after Christmas, and I just felt that now was the time.
Nice.
What I would do is go all in, which I'm in the midst of, and this is the first time I think I'm saying this out loud outside me and my husband / business partner, is going all in on the development of we're launching a leadership community for women next year, for women 40 plus, a midlife human-centered development community for midlife female leaders. So yeah, I'm pretty excited / freaking out about that and whether it's going to work. So that would be a brave thing to do. Yes.
It sounds amazing. And I'm sure it will be something that, I mean, I'm like, count me in. Sounds great. That's exciting that you and your husband / business partner work on that together.
Yes. Thank you.
Really good. All right. Well, keep us posted on that. And that flows nicely into my next question. What is coming up for you in life or business in the coming months? And how can people reach out and connect with you?
Sure. Well, what's coming up is we are currently taking applications for our Turning Point program. It's a 6-month development program for executive and senior women. It's all about embracing the midlife power of female leadership. We ran it for the first time this year, and it was universally described as a game changer, life-changing for the women who took part in it. It's just hugely gratifying personally to be a part of supporting these women. So it was so good. We're going to do it again. So that's what's happening at the moment. Applications through to the middle of December. If you want to find out about that, or you want to learn a bit more about me, you can go to katebilling.com. And you can also follow me on LinkedIn. Invite me to connect over there. That's my socials of choice.
Nice one. Okay. And I mentioned a LinkedIn group in your introduction. Is that something anyone can join or?
Yeah, yeah. It is. So it's the Menopause at Work NZ group. If you put in menopause, it'll come up. It's the largest group of its kind on LinkedIn globally, which is pretty amazing. We don't just have people from New Zealand in there, but largely New Zealand. And it is really for in-house menopause champions and change makers, mm-hmm. is what I would say. So anyone who wants to play a part changing the conversation about menopause in our workplaces. Most women in this age group are in employment. We have very high employment rates. So the workplace is somewhere where women should be able to find out about this, given our generation was not given any information mm-hmm. about this. But also it's a super important life transition for organizations to be supporting so that they can retain precious female talent, you know. So just search for menopause and you'll find Menopause at Work NZ. Request to join and I'll approve it.
Yes, that sounds amazing. I mean, yesterday I was meeting with a group of women and I am very into natural remedies and natural essential oils. We were talking about menopause and some of them were like, oh, I just thought essential oils were lovely for fragrance. I didn't realize the emotional and physical benefits. So there's just so much information out there that a lot of people just get access to. So
yep.
Brilliant.
Yep.
I love what you're doing. So good. All right. Well, before we wrap things up, Kate, is there anything else you'd love to share with our listeners today on the topic of human obsession with humanity or menopause or leadership?
I would just leave people with an invitation, really, and that is to, it's something that I live by and I encourage everyone else to think about on the regular, and that is don't let who you're being get in the way of who you could become.
Don't let who you're being get in the way of who you can become. Is that right? Love it. Thank you so much, Kate, for sharing your wisdom with us today and some inspiration. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Loved it.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to, dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.